a dear friend of mine, Ed Birdwell, was the horn player in the American Brass Quintet when I was the trumpet player in the quintet. One of his first orchestras, maybe the first orchestra, was being executive director with Laco. And Neville had just left after 10 years, and they were looking for a new music director. And so Ed said, well, why don't you come in and do a week as a guest and see what happens? Be a nice place for you. And I did at the Mark Taper Forum. Mark Taper Forum is, of course, a theater, which means very dry acoustics. And the deal was we played concerts on Monday nights because that was the dark night for the theater. But you couldn't move the sets. So I went out to conduct this concert. The horns were sitting in the bathroom of this set with the toilet between them. I mean, it was really quite something. Before I went on stage, the stage manager comes to me and he says, Maestro, would you like the same routine that we do with Neville? I said, oh, of course. What's that? He said, well, we have a glass of cognac before the concert. I said, well, no, I guess not. And that was my first time with the orchestra. And then I became the music director. It was a thrilling time. Great musicians. Mm-hmm. Fun. Interesting people. And as you know, we made lots of recordings because Nonesuch was a recording company I worked for as a trumpet player in New York, moved to L.A., and Jack Holtzman now owned it through Electro Asylum, and his brother Keith was going to run it. Of course, everybody was upset. Everybody, I shouldn't say. The music writers were upset because Tracy Stern, who was this visionary, wasn't coming to L.A., and therefore the company moved. And I think they offered her to come, and she said no. She lived in Brooklyn. She wasn't moving to Brooklyn. If you knew her, you'd know she would never leave Brooklyn. And so she was without a job, and the music press really was very down on them. So Keith said, well, we got to do some interesting repertoire. And he came to me, and Ara Guzalemian was the who was here at KUC for many years. He was at Juilliard now, as the head of the music division in essence, came up with some great ideas, and we did some great recordings. And the other company was Delos. Amelia Haygood and Carol Rosenberger lived in Santa Monica. They were doing audiophile recordings, and they wanted to make recordings. So here we were. Wow! Right away, making lots of recordings. So recently, I put out 30 CDs on Naxos of kind of a retrospective of my recording life. But what I put on it was recordings that were out of print or never released on CD. Most of the Laco recordings that we did that were on Nonesuch are on that set. And boy, the Schrecker Chamber Symphony, the Cherubini Symphony, the Schoenberg First Chamber Symphony. I mean, just so many great performances. And it was just a thrill to bring back all the memories of all those great players, to come back for the 50th anniversary, and I was their second music director. It's really quite thrilling.
You had this highly celebrated engineer at Delos.
John Ergel. They were an audiophile label, which means that, yes, they produced CDs or LPs, whatever, but they did it with the highest level of engineering possible. And their guru was John Ergel, who lived here. And John won numerous Grammys, and he was brilliant. I guess it took me a while because I wasn't really an audiophile person. I just cared about music, and I cared about performances and phrasing and its tempos and, you know, all those balances. And so it took me a while before I realized what a genius this guy was. And he came up to Seattle and recorded us up there as well. And the amazing thing was that after he wasn't recording us, we used our own local engineers up there through the symphony, they just did it the way John did it. And how lucky we were to have him.
Let's talk about the years with the Seattle Symphony as shaping its reputation and making it, you know, putting it out there in such a major way, and also championing American music. And it's funny that, you know, that recently we can still talk about championing American music because it's not Howard Hanson in the 20s and 30s anymore, but still there's a vast amount of American music that still needs help.
Well, the shock is, I guess it's a shock. I mean, there are composers like John Adams and Philip Glass and Terry Riley and Steve Reich and people like that who are enormously successful, popular. So you do an opera, Philip Glass, and it gets a tremendous amount of attention. People care deeply about it. It's all involved with the art world, the theater world. It's more than music in its way. And so you have that tremendous success of living composers. Then you have a whole group of living composers from who really had their fame in the 80s and the 90s. You know, people like Joe Schwantner and Stephen Albert and Ellen Zwillich and Joan Tower and what I would call traditional composers in the sense that they weren't avant-garde. When they wrote music, most people could really understand it. It wasn't like, what was that all about? You know. And now we're at a point where what we get is a lot of the avant-garde, at least in New York, where I live now, it's almost all the avant-garde. And again, I'm not saying that doesn't have a place. Of course it does. But to the point where the great symphonists of the 20th century, you mentioned Howard Hanson or Alan Hovhaness or Walter Piston, Roy Harris, William Schumann, David Diamond, and so forth, they don't get played at all. So I went to Seattle in 85. It was probably 2 or 3 years later that I thought we could make great recordings. We recorded the four Brahms symphonies in, I think, 2 days, 3 days. You know, you go through it because the orchestra was so great and we knew the repertoire so well. We understood each other. If I had recorded a Brahms symphony in 1988, it would have taken me a week, not a day. Because even though we conceptually knew what we wanted, we weren't technically ready to do it quickly. We had to do it over and over and over again. We got the same result, but it was much harder. So for those years, we really worked to do traditional repertoire. You know, the Robert Schumann symphonies and a lot of Wagner and things like that. But really the niche we created was in this 20th century American symphonists. And we produced a lot of recordings. We did all the William Schumann symphonies. We did all of the Howard Hanson symphonies. We did quite a few of Piston and Diamond and Menon and Creston and so forth. And what was interesting to me is that they were very successful. The recordings were successful. I think we had 14 Grammy nominations from those recordings. The audience loved it. I'll tell you a very interesting story. We had a composer in residence, Stephen Albert, and he was with me in the early 90s, and it was probably 92 or 3. And he called me up and said, Jerry, the most extraordinary thing happened. I got a call from Libby Larson, who was composer in residence in Minneapolis. And with our, in those days, short season of subscription concerts, we did more American music than any other orchestra in the country. And so he said, well, we got to put a press release out. We have to announce it. We have to make a big deal of this. And I said, Stephen, don't tell anyone. He said, what do you mean don't tell anyone? Oh, he was very upset. I said, you know, the audiences are growing. They love the music. They understand the language of these composers. They don't. Every time I program a piece of Howard Hanson, they don't say, who's that horrible modern composer? They, oh, wonderful, a piece of... I said, if we start telling them that we do more American music than anyone else, I'm going to get killed. They're going to write letters and say, you do too much American music. How could you do that to us? Don't tell anyone because everybody's happy. And we didn't. And we continued. And we continued to do these pieces. Very rare that anyone complained. Everybody just loved it. It was really a very exciting time, and we had a mission, really. And as an American, I wanted that mission to be American music.